March, week 2, Monday. 1. The hand. Reading. A Thanksgiving Day editorial in the newspaper told of a school teacher who asked her class of first graders to draw a picture of something they were thankful for. She thought of how little these children from poor neighborhood actually had to be thankful for. But she knew that most of them would draw pictures of turkeys or tables with food. The teacher was taken back with the picture Douglas handed in, a small, childishly drawn hand. But whose hand? The class was captivated by the abstract image. "I think it must be the hand of God that brings us food," said one child. "A farmer," said another, "because he grows the turkeys." Finally, when the others were at work, the teacher bent over at Douglas's desk and asked whose hand it was. "It's your hand, teacher," he mumbled. She recalled that frequently at recess she had taken Douglas, a scrubby, forlorn child, by the hand. She often did that with the children, but it meant so much to Douglas. Perhaps this was everyone's Thanksgiving, not for the material things given to us, but for the chance, in whatever small way, to give to others.
Tuesday. 2. Christmas present. Reading. A friend of mine named Paul received an automobile from his brother as a Christmas present. On Christmas Eve, when Paul came out of his office, a street urchin was walking around the shiny new car, admiring it. "Is this your car, mister?" he asked. Paul nodded. "My brother gave it to me for Christmas." The boy was astounded. "You mean your brother gave it to you and it didn't cost you anything? Boy, I wish..." He hesitated. Of course, Paul knew what he was going to wish for. He was going to wish he had a brother like that. But what the lad said jarred Paul all the way down to his heels. "I wish," the boy went on, "that I could be a brother like that." Paul looked at the boy in astonishment. Then impulsively he added, "Would you like to take a ride in my automobile?" "Oh, yes, I'd love that." After a short ride, the boy turned and with his eyes aglow said, "Mister, would you mind driving in front of my house?" Paul smiled a little. He thought he knew what the lad wanted. He wanted to show his neighbors that he could ride home in a big automobile. But Paul was wrong again. "Will you stop where those two steps are?" the boy asked. He ran up the steps. Then, in a little while, Paul heard him coming back, but he was not coming fast. He was carrying his little crippled brother. He sat him down on the bottom step, then sort of squeezed up against him and pointed to the car. "There she is, buddy, just like I told you upstairs. His brother gave it to him for Christmas, and it didn't cost him a cent. And some day I'm going to give you one just like it. Then you can see for yourself all the pretty things in the Christmas windows that I've been trying to tell you about." Paul got out and lifted the lad to the front seat of his car. The shining-eyed older brother climbed in beside him, and the three of them began a memorable holiday ride. That Christmas Eve, Paul learned what Jesus meant when he had said, "It is more blessed to give."
Wednesday, 3. Work and Baby. Reading. Four best friends meet at the hospital since their wives are giving birth to their babies. The nurse comes up to the first man and says, "Congratulations, you got twins." The man says, "How strange. I'm the manager of Minnesota Twins." After a while, the nurse comes up to the second man and says, Congratulations, you got triplets. The man is delighted. Strange, I worked as a director for the Three Musketeers. Finally, the nurse comes up to the third man and says, Congratulations, you got quadruplets. The man is happy and says, Ironic, I work for the Hotel Four Seasons. All three of them are happy until they see their last buddy jumping all over the place, cursing God and banging his head on the wall. They ask him what's wrong, and he answers, What's wrong? I work for 7-Up.
Thursday, 4. The Language of Music. Reading. A painter hangs his or her finished pictures on a wall, and everyone can see it. A composer writes a work, but no one can hear it until it is performed. Professional singers and players have great responsibilities, for the composer is utterly dependent on them. A student of music needs as long and as arduous a training to become a performer as a medical student needs to become a doctor. Most training is concerned with technique, for musicians have to have the muscular proficiency of an athlete or a ballet dancer. Singers practice breathing every day, as their vocal cords would be inadequate without controlled muscular support. String players practice moving the fingers of the left hand up and down while drawing the bow to and fro with the right arm, two entirely different movements. Singers and instruments have to be able to get every note perfectly in tune. Pianists are spared this particular anxiety, for the notes are already there, waiting for them, and it is the piano tuner's responsibility to tune the instrument for them. But they have their own difficulties. The hammers that hit the string have to be coaxed not to sound like percussion, and each overlapping tone has to sound clear. This problem of getting clear texture is one that confronts student conductors. They have to learn to know every note of the music and how it should sound, and they have to aim at controlling these sounds with fanatical but selfless authority. Technique is of no use unless it is combined with musical knowledge and understanding. Great artists are those who are so thoroughly at home in the language of music that they can enjoy performing works written in any century.
Friday, 5. Breaking the Silence. Reading. How did you do it, Dad? How have you managed not to take a drink for almost 20 years? It took me almost 20 years to have the courage to even ask my father this very personal question. When Dad first quit drinking, the whole family was on pins and needles every time he got into a situation that, in the past, would have started him drinking again. For a few years, we were afraid to bring it up for fear the drinking would begin again. I had this little poem that I would recite to myself at least 4 to 5 times a day, was Dad's reply to my 18-year-old unasked question. The words were an instant relief and constant reminder to me that things were never so tough that I could not handle them, Dad said. And then he shared the poem with me. The poem's simple yet profound words immediately became part of my daily routine as well. About a month after this talk with my father, I received a gift in the mail from a friend of mine. It was a book of daily affirmations, with one affirmation listed for each day of the year. It has been my experience that when you get something with days of the year on it, you automatically turn to the page that lists your own birthday. I hurriedly opened the book to November 10th to see what words of wisdom this book had in store for me. I did a double take, and tears of disbelief and appreciation rolled down my face. There, on my birthday, was the exact same poem that had helped my father for all these years. It is called the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.